Hi, I'm Kieran O'Donnell. Welcome to Business Matters. For this week's podcast, I speak to Malachy Eastwood, CEO of Gerton Technologies and Letterkenny, a software company which the Belfast native set up with Peter Cullingham in 2001. Gerton Technologies' first contract was with the Donegal Fire Service, which came about after a chance conversation at a wedding between Peter Cullingham and the then Fire Chief of the Donegal Fire Service.
So we began with a piece of payroll software for the Donegal Fire Service, and that happened because of an argument that the then Chief Fire Officer had with my partner Peter Cullingham at a wedding. And the Chief, it was given out that he didn't like software developers. And Peter says, well, why? And he says, I hired one to write a piece of software, and he made a mess of it. And Peter said, okay, well, I'll do it for you. So Peter was affronted, right? So that was how the whole idea began, and that's back in the mid-90s. So since then, it has been a journey that has taken us from Donegal throughout Ireland to the UK to Australia, and it's been a very, very interesting journey, I have to say, you know.
Before we talk about that journey, Malachy, I suppose I want to talk about yourself and your own childhood upbringing and how you landed in Donegal. A Belfast native?
A Belfast native who went to America for 6 months and ended up there 5 years. I didn't do a tap at school, and I left Belfast in 86 with the idea of being a musician, a professional musician. Right now, there's one thing that you do need to be a professional musician, and that is talent. Right, which I didn't have any of it. Right, I had enthusiasm, but I had zero talent. But I did. I got lucky, right, in that I ended up in an Irish folk band, and we were house band in Bourbon Street in New Orleans for the best part of 4 years. Right, and I met my now wife Margaret, who's from Milford here, and we met in New Jersey, and we went down to New Orleans, and then we came home for a holiday in 1990. Christmas, and this is back in the day when immigration checks were very, very sporadic, right? But we were unlucky, and we were checked going back out again at Christmas 1990, around the 20th of December. I had to be out for a gig on New Year's Eve, and we weren't allowed in. So long story short, I ended up living in Donegal by accident. We ended up living in Donegal by accident. But in truth, it was the best thing ever happened to us. It's a great life. It's a great lifestyle here, you know. But I was reared in Belfast, youngest of 15, 10 sisters, and my dad was in the scrap business in Belfast. And so always had an interest in business, but actually ending up in business was very much an accident.
Were you involved in the family business, Malachy, at that time?
I worked in the family business for about 3 years, right? Now, I, as I said, I didn't do a tap at school. But my parents realised that they realised early doors the value of education. Because back in Belfast in the 60s and the 70s, they really, from our side of the tracks, as it were, the only way you were going to get ahead was to get educated, right? But of course, I was in Egypt. I didn't see that. And I didn't do a tap on my O-levels. And my dad very, very, very reluctantly agreed to hire me. I had to give me a job, and I worked in a company for about 3 years, and I didn't like it at all. So that's why I went to America. But actually, the funny thing about it is, there's a website that the BBC has launched. I don't know how long ago they launched it, called BBC Rewind, right? And there was a nephew of mine just about 2 weeks ago found a video on that of my dad being interviewed on the 30th of December 1976. And he was talking about the recession, and in particular the recession in the scrap industry, right? And it was absolutely remarkable. We didn't know it existed, right? And so they had a yard in Anderson's Town in Belfast. If you, it's just down the road from Casement Park, right? And they were the largest scrap dealers in Ireland, and they used to process the scrap, take it down to the docks, and then it would be shipped off to all the steel mills, be it in the UK or down to Cork or even over to Spain, et cetera, right? But he was being interviewed about the recession in 1976, right? And it was remarkable looking at it, right? Because here he was 62 at the time, I would have been 11. And it was remarkable in the sense that the company, it was built at a time when the system, it was not designed for people from his side of the tracks to be successful. So in business, you have your competitors. That's fair enough. But when you're also competing against the system, right? So Northern Ireland was a very it was leaning towards one side of the community at that particular time. And I was watching this interview at the time, thinking, my God, it was remarkable that he and his brother Ramey grew this business and created it. They were the largest employers in West Belfast. And it was a remarkable success story. But also, they came through fighting the system through the 60s and the 70s, also came through the recessions. So looking at it, it was actually a great form of inspiration, because now we have COVID and we have all of the issues that are surrounding that, but it will pass and we will get through it. I'm watching Dad in that interview and imagine the pressure that he was under at the time. You know, this was the 30th of December 1976. It was a global recession. It was one of the worst recessions, deepest ever. So it acted as a form of inspiration. It really was, you know. And it's been, he was in business, but I didn't plan to be in business, and I ended up in business by accident. Went to college here in Letterkenny in 1974. I realised very quickly, especially when I moved back to Donegal, that you're never going to make a living at music, right? So I went to, when our oldest lad went to Nashville School, Margaret was working in Unify at the time. I was a house husband. So I went to college in 94 to study computing, only because we didn't want me to go to college for 4 years and then not have a job at the end of it. So that's why I chose computing. I didn't have a particular interest in computing, I have to be honest, but I wanted to be, you know, try and be guaranteed a job at the end of it. So I went to college for 4 years, and while I was there, I met Peter. And I was looking there for a project in my third year, and Peter was a sole trader at the time, and he was writing a system for the GAA to manage the coaching database. And so I met Peter, and I worked on that as my project in third year. And then when I finished up in 98, he hired me. And then by that time, he had been writing the payroll software here for the Donegal Fire Service. So for about 2 years, I worked on that. He had then been hired by a company called Eland to open up a company here, which subsequently was sold on Edisita. And then in 2000, he says, you know, well, why don't we form a company and try and sell on the payroll software? And that's what happened, and that's how I ended up in business. It was purely by accident, a bit of happy accident.
You mentioned you had no interest in books. How did you find going back to education, which ultimately led you to the role you're in now?
It was a challenge, but I really enjoyed it, because I remember when I first moved here in 91, I decided I didn't know the lay of the land, and I thought I have to do something. So I was playing a few gigs at weekends, and what I did, there weren't many jobs around, and I applied to join the Tidy Towns in Letterkenny. So I was living in Milford, but I was on the Tidy Towns, and I remember we were working along the Pierce Road, and I'm guessing now it probably was November 91, maybe December 91, and there was a load of people, there was a load of young ones walking over towards a community centre, and I was asked, where are all these people going? And I said they were students going to do their exams, right, in the community centre. And I thought to myself, you know what, I can do that. I want a chance to do that, right? And that sort of sparked the idea of going back out of college. So it took another 2 years to get there, maybe, you know, because we had a baby at the time. So I was very driven. I knew, okay, I was fortunate enough to get a chance to go to college, so I was going to make it work. I thrived more at the less technical end of computing, you know, systems analysis and things like that, knew the theory, because I wasn't a geek, right? I wasn't, you know, I wasn't a natural programmer, even though I became a programmer. So I was determined to make it work. So it was hard, but, you know, but we made it work, because we knew at the end of it, there was a prize of a job. Like, there were weekends, I mean, you're playing music, right? And you might be dreading that phone call on a Saturday evening at about 7 o'clock, you know, from Gordon Hawk saying, you know what, there's not many about, we're going to cancel a gig. That was the 40 pence that you were relying on, you know, to keep you in milk and bread, you know, to the following, you know, Thursday or Friday. So we thought, you know what, there has to be a better life. So when I got the opportunity to go out of college, I was determined to make it work. And so it did work. I got a degree out of it and got a job out of it. So it was, even though it was hard work, but it was one that we embraced. And I mean Margaret as well, because Margaret was working in Unify, but she also gave me the space, you know, for my studies in the evening time as well. So it was great, you know.
Where did Garden Technologies set up its base initially, Malachy?
Initially, we had an office in the old Innovation Centre at the RTC at LYIT. That's where Peter had an office, right? But then we had to move out of there because it was an innovation centre and really businesses were only supposed to be there for about a year at a time, right? But we were there for about maybe 2 or 3 years. So we overstayed our welcome. So then we got an office above the cavern in Letterkenny, right? And it was on the third floor. Now, that was fine for us. It was only two of us. It was interesting when you went in on a Monday morning, because on a Monday morning when you went in there, the door, there was broken bottles and the remnants of a busy weekend outside a pub.
And maybe you were playing on the gig the night before.
Actually, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, yeah. But it was, we had an office there and then we moved over here. This is the Enterprise Fund Business Centre in 2004 and we've been here ever since. And it's a great place and very good landlords, but it's a quality building. So we've been in this building now for 16 years.
In relation to staff and staff numbers, how did the staff numbers start to build and what areas, Malachy?
It was the two of us first, and then our first hire was Garvin Murphy, who's now who's been with us ever since. So Garvin, I think, joined us in about 2003, and Garvin is our chief technical officer. And he's a great guy. And his father, in fact, Vincent Murphy, was the head of computing at the college back in the RTC days. So Garvin, our first hires were developers. So our first three or four hires were developers. And then we got into hiring people in support and in software testing. But the majority of our staff would be developers. And ironically, they're the hardest to get, because the largest employers in the town here are... You know, they would hoover up all of the developers, be it the likes of Primerica or CETA. But we really jumped forward around 2000. So we sold our software. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. We developed the payroll software and sold it throughout the Irish Fire and Rescue Services, okay? And if you remember back around 2002, 2003, there was the collapse in the dot-com business, the dot-com bubble burst, okay? So a lot of... businesses went under, but we were working in the public sector in Ireland, so we decided to take our payroll software and go over to the UK sector. So we were working for emergency service, fire and rescue services, and we pretty much sold our software on to about maybe 70% of the Irish fire and rescue services. So we went over to the UK in around 2003 and 2004, brought over the payroll software to see if was there any opportunities, because we liked working for the fire service, because apart from all else, they paid their bills, right? And so we brought the software over and they said, nah, it's okay, but where there is a gap here is they had a problem managing the availability of their part-time staff. So we built this rostering product to manage the availability of part-time staff, and it took us 2 or 3 years to get it up and running. We showed it to a lot of UK fire services. They liked it, but they didn't want to be the first. We weren't based in the UK. We weren't a big company, but we knew they liked it, right? So we just needed one. And Gloucestershire Fire and Rescue in 2007 gave us a contract, and then from that point on, the contracts came like dominoes. You know, they all fell, and then we moved. Then and we would got feedback around 2010, 11, 12 from visiting Australian fire services who were visiting the UK, who were looking at the software going, oh, okay, that's interesting. So then we went over to Australia in 2013 and we got lucky. Just as we arrived into Sydney, the fire service there had an agreement with the trade unions. And the agreement was that they get paid annual retainers. Well, they get paid monthly retainers. But they had an agreement that said that the amount of the retainer that you would receive on a monthly basis was based on the number of hours that you were available. But they didn't have a way to measure the number of hours that they were available. I walk in to the room and all of a sudden, here's a piece of software that allows them to do that. So within a year, we get a contract in Sydney. And so we've been lucky over the years. And now we work in Ireland, the UK, and Australia.
You had to restructure things back in 2019. Mm. Talk to me a wee bit about that.
Yeah, that was a difficult time. So, as a lot of businesses who work in the UK realised, Brexit in June 2016 was just an absolute, it was a seismic shock. And we were caught in the headlights for the best part of a year. I think everybody, I think even the government, even the UK government was trying to figure out what the hell's going on here. So we weren't the only ones. So what we decided to do was, right, okay, we're going to become vulnerable in the UK potentially, right? Now, as it so happens, hindsight, as it so happens, we weren't as badly affected, but obviously what did affect us was what was the value of sterling. However, in 2017, we thought, okay, so we need to look for alternatives. And a couple of the ones that we looked at was Northern Europe, for example, Denmark, and in particular, the US. So we tried to break into those markets, and it didn't really go as well as we had expected it to go, in particular Denmark. In the US, we had to change our software again and again and again. We had partners out there, and they were going to resell the software. But as 2017 and 2018 went on, they asked us to change it a bit more, and it didn't work out as well as we had hoped. So we had to restructure the company back in March of 2019. Now, it was difficult, but it wasn't all bad in the sense that we now generate revenue from the US, and we still have our relationship with our partner out there. But having to restructure a business is very difficult, right? It's emotionally difficult, but like everything else, there's great learning in it. Okay, so we learned an awful lot. But as part of the restructure, we got in an investor, and he's been brilliant. And he works with me on a daily basis, and he comes from a background. He was working for an organisation, it was a $1 billion organisation, so he was bringing his experience to that. And he retired last year, but his experience of working at that level, and then he's bringing it into our business, and it's been whilst it was difficult. After we restructured the company the first year back, we returned to profitability, and it's been a huge learning exercise. Yeah.
And earlier this year, you were in the good position of looking to recruit more employees.
Yes, we did. We actually began recruiting last year, but this year we have the business has settled down again, and we can see opportunities for the business going forward, both in Ireland, the UK and Australia, and you know what, in the US as well. But this time we're taking things on a very steady basis. But what we've done is we began hiring again. We launched a recruitment drive earlier this year for software developers, for software testers, and for members for our support team. So it's been a success, and you know, but the difference this time, like I remember back in the Brexit years, 16, 17, 18, you didn't always feel in control. You're thinking, you know, there's an awful lot going on here, right? You know, but now it feels that we have our hands firmly on the reins.
Why is that? Why do you get that sense this time, Malachy?
Because I'm not going to say let me put it this way. I'm not going to say that we are the best run company in Donegal. I wouldn't say that. But what I would say is, I don't think there's a better run company in Donegal. I mean, Mark and I have daily meetings, and everything. We now pay attention to detail. We don't take on projects that are going to stretches. We're constantly measuring everything. You know, what gets measured gets done, isn't that right? And we have pulled out of projects that are causing us difficulties, and now we only take on projects that will benefit the business. Transparency is also key. Our staff, when we restructured the business, you know, they were, of course, it was difficult for them too, because a lot of their friends were losing their jobs, but they gave us a second chance. Okay, and you know, they remain very loyal, so we owe it to them. I'm owed it to them. So now, you know, transparency is key. So everything is measured. Everything is done properly. We don't take any risks. Of course, there's risks in business. Of course, there is. But now it's more controlled. It's more measured. And you know, the amount of attention that we pay to detail and the support that I have and that I get from Mark as my business partner, you know, it means that everything now we just project forward, we forecast, and we leave nothing at a chance. And it's it has proven to be very beneficial.
19 years been head of your own business. I'm sure you've learned a lot. Is there one big lesson that sort of stands out in your own mind, Malachy, since you started out in 2001?
Yes, I would say that treating the staff and the customers, but in particular the staff, if you treat them with dignity and respect, and it filters right throughout the business and it filters into the customer. So as I said, when we restructured the business, you know, the staff gave us a chance. Now, you'd need to ask them this, but I feel that one of the reasons that they did was we took very good care of them over the years, right? And we continue to do that. And we also take very good care of the customers. You treat them with respect. We have clients that we've been working with for 23 years, okay? And, you know, as long as you do your job properly and you're constantly trying to be the best that you can be, we don't always get it right. We're human, of course, aren't we? But as long as you do the best and you're constantly innovating and finding better ways to do the job for the customers, even better ways to treat the staff, give them opportunities to grow, then during the tough times, they will pay you back. They will remain loyal with you. So from our perspective, the biggest lesson, I believe, is treating the staff and the customers with respect, but also learning. When things go wrong, hitting the pause button and sitting and saying, okay, so what can I learn from this? And so in the good times, and in particular in the bad times, you take the time to learn the lessons, and then also treating everybody around you with respect. And that's, I think, is adds to the solidity of the business.
Do you ever think back to your early days with your father's business, and does the mind go back there now and again when you're in your own business and the here and now?
Well, what I wouldn't give to have a 10-minute conversation with Dad, to talk to him, because he used to talk about business all the time, but I was a teenager, right? But I do some of my happiest memories. I remember going for a walk with Dad in the beach. He retired from Belfast down to Drogheda, and we went down to Bettystown one time. And I think it was around 96, 97, a couple of years before he died. He died in 99, and we were out of walk. And I remember we were walking, and I could see this ship. It was going to cross the bay. And he said to me, that's, you know, the ship's obviously empty. I was saying, how do you know the ship's empty? And he was saying, because of the water line, you could see the fact, you know, do you know the rusty red? You could see, you know, and he says, that's how you know if a boat is empty, is, you know, the more of that red you can see. And he was just sort of having these conversations. And, you know, but unfortunately, because I was in America for so many years, and he was running a business in the 70s and 80s, I didn't take on enough knowledge from those conversations, and I would love to have another one, you know, just to talk about this, about, you know, about our business, but, you know, to hear the stories again about his business and how they got round all of the challenges that they had in their business. So it's, and you know, I guess, you know, I mean, I have a picture of him up here on the wall. That's up there with his brother, and I have it up there because that is a constant reminder to me of what you can achieve through teamwork. The two brothers built that business through teamwork. The one that they're below it is of him out over the trip with the British Scrap Federation to Japan in 1967, and I have it out there because you know, also his principles. He would not let his principles go, and he was a very principled man as well. So I hope he would be proud of what we've achieved at Garton. But I would, you know, I just love that opportunity to speak. So I think about business now all the time, but, you know, 30 years ago I had a dream of being a musician, and now I mean, Dad didn't retire until he was in his early 70s, and I don't see myself retiring until my early 70s either, you know.
Finally, you mentioned teams. You had a big team at home. Just going back to the 15 children in the house, it must have been a busy household.
It was a busy household. I'm the youngest of 15, and Maura, who's the oldest, is only 16 years older than me. So Mum and Dad, you know, had kids.
Were you spoiled?
No, I wasn't spoiled, because the ones immediately above me were the twins. Emer and Aideen were the twins immediately above me. They were spoiled and I wasn't. No, of course, I would say that, of course. But no, we had a wonderful life at home. And you know, it's only now when you look back on it that, you know, Mum and Dad rearing children in Belfast through the 60s and the 70s and into the 80s. It must have been a terribly worrying time for them, you know. But no, I was the youngest of 15. I lived in North Belfast. And but Mum and Dad, I remember even now, like, all we had back in those days was our culture, right? So right from the moment that I remember my earliest days, it was about Irish music, Irish dance and Irish sport, right? So we were huge Antrim fans in our house. And of course, being an Antrim fan, I was in America back in 1989 when I qualified for the hurling final, if you remember, the loss to Tipperary, but they beat Offaly in this semi-final that year. It was a year, in fact, our Emmett was born. But the point is, they were fantastic parents. And, you know, again, to look back, to rear a family and to grow and run a business in the Belfast of that era was a huge achievement, and I've nothing but tremendous love and respect for them, you know.
Very funny, Malachy. What does 2021 have in store for yourself and Garton Technologies?
It has opportunity. It is opportunity. And I know that the COVID crisis is, you know, it's not great. It's not great. But we look forward with, you know, with opportunities. We have opportunities to grow our business in the UK and Australia. And as I said, everything, you know, you can get past all of the hurdles. Here at Garton, we had our own hurdle 18 months ago, which we alluded to earlier on there. But we got over that hurdle, and we see opportunity. We released a new product earlier on this year for managing the competencies of emergency service staff. So this is, you know, in the emergency service, they need to know, you know, that their people are properly qualified. Right. And so we launched that product late last year, in fact, sorry, forgive me. And so, you know, so that's going to provide us with tremendous opportunities. And we've grown a reputation in the UK, and there's now opportunities beginning, even though there is a recession in the UK and Australia, for that matter. You know, because we are delivering products and quality products, and we've grown a reputation, that opportunities are beginning to you know, to show themselves. So we're optimistic for 21 and for the next 10 years. We're optimistic, you know.
Malachy Eastwood, CEO of Garton Technologies, thanks for joining us on Business Matters.
Thank you very much.
That's it for another edition of Business Matters. I'd like to thank my guest, Malachy Eastwood. I'd like to thank Kenneth Wilson on sound, and thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, drop an email to businessmatters@highlandradio.com.